I tell you, it's good to be back. I've only missed one Sunday in the last month, and I'm so grateful to Jeff Hirota for preaching while I was visiting family. But on all the non-Sundays, it feels like I've been gone for an entire month, a lot of trips, and I am so grateful to get to settle back in a little bit and just be here with you, not just on Sunday morning, but throughout the week and other times. I was reminded this week of a very difficult commute I once had. Now, this is back when my commute wasn't just walking next door to get to work, which, to be honest, I'm a big fan of. But back in the day when my drive was a little bit further, and, you know, it wasn't a bad drive every day, but there was this one particular day where, like, there were 2 or 3 miles in the middle where we were going, like, 5 miles an hour. It, honest to God, took me, like, 45 minutes to get 2 miles. And then all of a sudden, the traffic cleared away, and everything opened up, and we were, in moments, going the speed limit once again, and there was no more problem. Well, actually, there was no more traffic. I still had a problem. Because there was absolutely no reason for the traffic. No reason at all. There was no accident. There was no debris in the road. There was no stalled car. There was no police officer. There was nothing. We had sat in traffic for absolutely no reason. All the traffic, all the waiting, all the frustration, nothing to blame. And that was a problem for me. This is a very interesting moment for me, theologically speaking, as I suddenly realized how desperate I was for there to be a reason, right? The waiting was going to be the same either way, but I wanted to be able to look at something and be like, that's why. I don't know, for some reason I thought that would make me feel better. You know what I'm talking about? When we know why something happens, it seems to give us options, right? Like, oh, I'll try to fix that in the future, or I'll avoid that next time, or at least I have something to get angry with, right? This isn't just about traffic. It's about any number of things that happen in our lives when we wish we could point to something and say, that's why. All these different reactions and the desire for a reason, you know, they feel like maybe if we just knew we'd have a chance, or we'd have the possibility of some kind of an attempt at control in our lives. Wouldn't that be nice? Just even the possibility of a chance of some kind of illusion of control? Oh, that would be nice. Now, not every drive I take is so revealing, but this causeless traffic really got me thinking and reflecting. I think it got me thinking about this whole problem because it was safe to think about. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a very removed kind of situation. This wasn't about an ill family member. This wasn't about a lost job. This wasn't about anything personal. It was very objective, just out there. I can reflect on traffic not having a reason a lot more easily. It wasn't that risky to consider it. You know, usually the desire for a reason, the search for a cause of our problems, is motivated by something deeply personal that's just too close to home to spend that much time with. That's why we want to know why so badly. But it's also why we have so much trouble wrestling for an answer. Since the beginning, I mean the very beginning, since in the beginning, humanity has tried to figure out why things happen, especially the bad things. I mean, we'd love to know why the good things happen too, but I don't know too many folks who stay up at night or cry themselves to sleep wondering why the good stuff is happening. We'd love to know, but there's certainly stuff that challenges, stuff that does keep us up, stuff we just have 3 little letters for, W-H-Y. You know, in the last 2 days, I've done 3 funerals. Well, actually, I did 2 funerals for 3 people. On Friday, I celebrated the life of a man named Tim. He's a 50-year-old man who, after beating heart failure just amazingly and doing everything his doctors asked him to and getting through the difficulty of it all, ended up with blood cancer, which took his life very, very quickly. He just retired. His daughter just got married. He was looking forward to amazing things to come in his life. And it's over. And then yesterday, I did a funeral for Franklin and for Alex, 2 brothers, 22 and 20 years old, who died in a car crash. One was a Marine who had just returned from active deployment, And the other was his brother, who was just this amazing example of what it means to march to the beat of your own drummer. These two boys were just beginning to consider who they were going to be as adults and what their lives were going to be. And then their mom got a phone call, and they were both gone. As I sat there to write both of these memorial services, I found myself staring at that same three-letter word that I'd already planned on wrestling with for today's sermon. Why? Why? I mean, I'd planned on this sermon months ago. I wanted us to consider why things happen in this world. And to be honest, if it wasn't these two stories, there would be others. There are so many stories that you all know because you have lived them and are living them right now. We hear this in our prayer time. The things that are going on, the diseases that are being wrestled with, children who have been lucky to receive a new heart, but at the same time we lament a lost life that gave them the opportunity for us. Well, that's wonderful, it's tough, it's hard, it's good, there's so many things that we hear about. There's no question of the global disasters and pandemics and strife and other such things going on, and it leaves us asking why. There are so many heartbreaks and losses and tragedies and disappointments that lead us to these same kinds of questions. Questions that don't have answers. And I want to be clear about that. I'm not going to pretend to have answers to these questions. But we want to be able to point at something. We want to know what caused it. You know, it's weird, even when there is a clear answer, when we can easily point to a decision that was made or a ripple of someone else's free will that ended up affecting us, even when we can point to something and say, okay, that's why, it doesn't actually change that much. Because then we still want to know why that happened. And even if that has a reason, we want to know why that happened. We can just keep chasing it back and tracing it back, and before we know it, we're lost in a sea of why. And so we ask. And I tell you, even the most devout, faithful, and wise people I know eventually get to that toughest of all questions. Did God do this? And if not, why did God let this happen? These are scary questions to let echo off of our walls. But they're real questions that echo off of our bedroom walls, hospital room walls, maybe the front dashboard of our car as we get into a place we can scream where no one can hear us. These are real questions. Anytime I think about this conversation, my mind goes back to an old episode of The Simpsons. Now, Ned Flanders, who happens to be the oakley-dokeliest person you could ever know, he experiences a plight that's on par with the biblical sufferings of Job. Tormented by the disasters all around him, this deeply faithful and, to be honest, overly annoying, perfect Christian goes to his pastor and asks the big question, did God do this to me? And the pastor responds, short answer, yes with an if. Long answer, no with a but. I mention this not only for a moment of levity, but because honestly, it's one of the best answers I've ever heard to these questions. Short answer, yes with an if. Long answer, no with a but. Did God do this? Well, yes, if you consider that God created the world and everything that exists, including free will, and as a result, our very creation, and everything all ties back to God's decision to even create us in the first place, then sure, God did this. Well, did God do this? No, but that doesn't mean God isn't present, nor does it mean that God is not active in the ways that we need or in the ways that God is willing and desiring to respond, nor does it mean that our actions are inconsequential, that whatever we do doesn't have an impact, or that we should do whatever we want, because you can see there's a long answer involved here. To be honest, there are so many long answers to these questions. And when we are hurting, when we are in pain, I don't like the short answer because it shouldn't be yes. But I don't like the long answer because I need something I can handle. There has to be something else. You know, there's a phrase that's been passed down from several pastors I know. I went to the person I learned it from and I said, was this your quote? And she said, no, it came from Blaine. And I went to Blaine and I said, is this your quote? He said, no, it came from Trigg. And I went to Trigg. Nobody knows where it came from. At this point, it's just been handed down from pastor to pastor to pastor. And it appears at the top of your bulletin this day. God has a will for everything that happens. But everything that happens is not God's will. I want us to hold on to that and return to it. Because though a lot of us may want to avoid asking the question why, right? I mean, we could try to push it off. We want to avoid the whole thing. Why ask why is more than an old beer slogan. It often can be gentle advice not to ask questions there may not be answers to. But that only works for so long. Whether it's a test result the doctor actually wants us to come in to hear, or a phone call no one ever wants to receive, a mistake you realize you made the moment you can't take it back, a natural disaster, an act of violence, or any number of other split-second moments that change our lives, we will all find ourselves, no matter how hard or how long we try to push it off, asking the question, why? And so we need to consider what some of the answers might be. You know, there are answers that people do often offer that are more troubling than the question itself, and I want to check in on one of these today. When I was in college, we took a campus ministry retreat up to a church in the mountains, and we concluded the weekend by attending worship in the church where we were staying. And during their joys and concerns time, a woman stood up and shared a joy she had. A relative, and I don't remember which one it was, a relative in her life had been fighting cancer, and suddenly it was gone. This was wonderful news. You could see the shared happiness in the room as they'd been praying about this for a while. And then the woman continued her sharing. And she continued to say that she was so glad that it was God's plan for this person to live. Let me name that I understand there is a world of theologies and understandings out there. And I carry a deep respect for the many ways people understand God and understand life. But this broke my heart. Not for her. She was fine. She was quite happy and well where she was. But there were other people in that room who were starting to begin a logic path of, oh, it was God's plan for your person to live, so what about the people in my life who... And you can see where this goes. They were following this path of logic that it was God's plan for this person to live, and it broke my heart for every other person in the room whose loved ones, parents, spouses, partners, children had not recovered from an illness. Because with that explanation, now suddenly the why questions in their lives had a very hard answer. Their loved ones died because what? It was God's plan? While respecting this person's right to carry their own understandings and beliefs about how God works, all I can tell you is this. That's not the God I know. The God I know doesn't take people from us. The God I know doesn't use disaster, violence, or illness to intentionally end someone's life. Now, if you're thinking back to a Sunday school lesson where you remember God doing those things in the Old Testament part of the Bible, let me briefly say that those stories tell us more about the desire of the people writing them to have a reason for the things that were going on they couldn't understand. The God I know does not choose some people to live while letting others die. The God I know is best expressed in these words from Jeremiah. I know the plans I have in mind for you, declares the Lord. They are plans for peace, not for disaster. They are plans to give you a future filled with hope. These are the words of God spoken through the prophet Jeremiah in the 29th chapter, where we hear of a God who plans for peace, a God who hopes for a future that's good. This is the God I know. So how do we reconcile these words of hope, of goodness, of peace with the pain and loss and brokenness that we know? Like I said, there's this beautiful, beautiful phrase that's been passed down, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 generations of preachers now. Nobody knows who said it first, but no one has forgotten it. God has a will for everything that happens, but not everything that happens is God's will. It's at the top of your bulletin today. I invite you to keep it. God has a will for everything that happens, but everything that happens is not God's will. Now, it doesn't exactly answer the question why, at least not fully, but it does eliminate a few possible answers. Some possible answers I don't find that helpful. Possible answers I don't find to be true with a loving, caring, nurturing God. And you know, sometimes when we can't find a single clear answer, sometimes eliminating some of the possibilities is the next best hope we have. Everything that happens is not God's will. That eliminates a few things that I don't want to see in life, that I don't want to see us carrying the weight of. When what we encounter in life leads to brokenness, sadness, and pain, that's not God's will. Let me say that one more time. When what we encounter in life leads to brokenness and sadness and pain, that is not God's will. If we can identify the cause of those experiences, it's often someone else's poor use of free will or an honest mistake or just bad luck. And as we trace things back, there's a certain moment where we just have to recognize God does not want us to feel this way. God does not use such things as a part of a plan. You know, if we can't identify the cause, I'm also not one who will assign the blame to God, because that's not the God I know. What I do believe to be true, what for me is in line with the God that I do know, is that God meets us where we are. I know a God who weeps alongside us in times of loss. I know a God whose heart breaks when tragedy strikes. I know a God who acknowledges that life has brought us, acknowledges where life has brought us, and sees a way forward for us. God desires to lead us forward into a future that has hope. God sort of says, okay, this is where we are. We can do this together. We can go from here. God knows where we go from wherever here is. And God will have a plan for us from there. I tell you, there's still so much more conversation to have on this topic. Conversations such as these often open up hurts that we would often rather not acknowledge we have. Let me know if you want to talk about that. It's not often I name a very specific theology or worldview and publicly disagree with it. If this has challenged you or offended you, let me know if you want to talk. If my overly brief comments about the Old Testament left you wanting to know, well, wait a second, how do you rationalize that? Because I swear it said God did that. Let me know if you want to talk. This is only a place to begin conversation. Because like I said, I'm not going to pretend to have answers to questions that honestly don't have them. But what we do have is a promise of relationship with God and with one another, so that we're not alone when the questions come. I also think it's a fair question to ask, how are we supposed to know what God's will is? If God has a will for everything that happens, it would be nice to know what that will is. Are we just supposed to do our best and hope it's what God wants? Short answer, yes with an if. Long answer, no with a but. But until we get to have that conversation, let me just offer this hint. And by hint, I mean one of my favorite scriptures from 1 John. Dear ones, let us not love with just words or speech, but let us love in action and truth. This is how we will know that we belong to the truth and reassure that our hearts are in God's presence. Let us love one another because love is from God. And everyone who loves is born from God and knows God because God is love. For me, this is God's will. This is that plan God has for a future with hope, that we would love, that we would know and live in and share God's love, even in the most difficult of times, especially in the most difficult of times. Because everything that happens is not God's will, but God does have a will for everything that happens. Amen.